Okay, so I'll speak a little faster, and I'll first discuss the ways that neutrinos will be discovered and the exciting physics we can do with them. I will talk about Z-bursts, because there was already some discussion, to which and I think I want to make a few comments about that. And also, another point I want to make is that with the new generation of experiments, we'll be able to do a sort of particle physics experiment and measure some quantities at an unprecedented square root of s of 10 to the 6 GeV. And first, we know that ultra-energy neutrinos are out there to be discovered. There are astrophysical sources that Peter has described in his talk, and they will produce predictable expected flux at very high energies. In addition, we know that there are ultra-energy cosmic rays at around 10 to the 20 electron volts, and we know there is CMBR. So the interactions of protons with photons produces a calculable flux of cosmogenic neutrinos that go under the name of Drysin, Dotsepin, Kuzmin, or Protoroe and Johnson neutrinos. And so this is another target for experiments. And in addition, there may be pleasant surprises. For example, if Z-burst mechanism is correct, then one may be able to observe very, very powerful features in the neutrino spectrum at very high energy. So there is an experimental race to discover ultra-energy neutrinos. And there are lots of experiments, some of which are not mentioned here. For example, Piaget is the array I will briefly mention later. Amanda and Anita both are at the South Pole. And Anita is the radio detector that will fly in about 2 years on a balloon. Then IceCube, USA, and OWL are in the near future. This poor rendering of a plot that you have seen too many times already shows the events at the highest energies that have been observed. The blue points come from a gas experiment, and the red points from high-res experiment. And the two experiments that disagree, they disagree just about on every issue, even on the question whether they agree or not. High-res people say that the two experiments agree at 2 sigma, and Teshima gives talks saying that the two experiments disagree at 4 sigma. So they also disagree on the location of this feature, this ankle, this spectral feature, and more dramatically on the flux at the highest energy. These are two very different experiments. AGASSA is a ground array that is sensitive to the bottom of the atmospheric showers. But they collect particles, and they say they understand what they're doing because they don't depend on the properties of the atmosphere. Hi-RES is a fluorescent detector. They observe the showers develop in the air, and they see the whole shower. But of course, they have to measure the transparency of the atmosphere to calibrate and to get the energy. These questions will be resolved very shortly by a fantastic experiment, Pierre Auger Observatory. The southern side in Argentina is already collecting data. And it's being built, and in the process, it is collecting data. And one hopes that the northern Auger will also be approved, in which case one will be able to do the full sky coverage and have two identical arrays to do anisotropy studies and other good physics. Pierre Auger turns out to be a surprisingly good detector of neutrinos, better than it was advertised. And so neutrinos will be detected as horizontal air showers. So when you see a horizontal shower, either it's the leftover of a proton that hit the atmosphere very far away, or it's a neutrino that passed through a very thick layer in the atmosphere and then produced a shower. So what Pierre Auger will be able to do, they'll be able to triangulate and reconstruct where the vertex is, essentially. And that is because they have precise timing on all these tanks, and they actually will see the curved front. So then they can tell whether neutrino interacted far away or close by. And then, if it has a very long mean free path, then it is identified as neutrino. In addition, they have these mountains in one direction, the Andes. And so by doing anisotropy, they can also test for neutrinos. There should be more neutrinos coming from the mountains because the mountains are thicker, the neutrino can interact, produce a tau, and then the tau can shower outside the mountain. So they have, you know, a combination of all these factors, and the fact that their tanks are bigger than Agassiz, and that allows for widest, you know, solid angle, makes them a surprisingly good detector of neutrinos. An even better detector of ultra-Hangi cosmic rays and neutrinos will fly in space and will be mounted on the space station. And that's Extreme Universal Space Observatory, EUSA, that is funded jointly by ESA and NASA. What EUSA will do, it will look on the dark side of the atmosphere. It will look down on Earth and observe atmospheric showers using the fly's eye technique, but from above as opposed to from below. They will have a huge field of view. And in addition, so the reason they can reconstruct the shower is that they'll see the track, and at the end they will see the flash of Cherenkov light reflected back from the surface of the water. So they will, or the ground, but basically most of the Earth is water. So they'll see the track, the shower develop, and then they will see the end point, you know, with the position and the timing. So that's what the experimental programs are aiming at. Now, there was some discussion of zippers as a possible explanation of the highest energy cosmic rays. And the idea is that
that gets you 10 extra minutes.
That's right. See, I have come prepared. I didn't bring the backup transparencies, but I have come well prepared. So I have to manage to get the chairman's picture there as well. So the idea is that the ultra-energy cosmic rays evade the GZK cutoff because they are produced locally by extremely powerful cosmic ray neutrinos that interact with the Rayleigh background neutrinos, and that interaction, of course, has the highest cross-section at the Z-peak. The resulting particles are mostly photons, as you can see from this crude accounting. So this explanation has several appeals, in particular the fact that the requisite energy comes out naturally from what we think neutrino masses are. So if you, you know, there's a variety of models that that have been put forth to explain the ultra-energy cosmic rays, ranging from those that Boris is proud of having funded to those that Boris is proud not to have funded. So but what is, I mean, usually when you try to explain the events at 10 to the 21 or 10 to the 20 electron volts, you put a source at that energy, topological defects, and there's some fine tuning. Here there's this appealing coincidence or hint. The problem, of course, is that, you know, we need neutrinos of comparable energies. If Z burst mechanism is right, then as Ching-Pei Ma described yesterday, one can probe the clustering of neutrinos in the local supercluster, and one can also measure the neutrino masses because of this formula. So basically, you fit the cosmic ray spectrum to this formula, and you measure the neutrino masses. The the fluxes of particles from zippers were calculated by Graciela and other people, and you can see that you get mostly photons. Now, there are of course statements in the literature that that the observed fluxes of cosmic rays above 10 to the 18 or 10 to the 19 electron volts are identified as protons or nuclei. These statements are correct, and in fact, in this and they're not in contradiction with this calculation. If you see above 10 to the 19 electron volts, you do have a dominant proton contribution. Okay, so it's only above 10 to the 20 that photons would take over. The way you distinguish between protons and photons, there are several methods. For example, photons can pair produce a plus and minus of the Earth's magnetic field. So one would think that they can start showering higher in the atmosphere, but in fact, there's an LPM suppression of the interactions of Gram-Schrödinger at these high energies. So the E plus E minus pair that you produce comes into the atmosphere and can shower actually lower. So in other words, the shower max has a wider dispersion of heights in the atmosphere than you would expect from a proton. In addition, this interaction with magnetic field of the Earth introduces north-south asymmetry. So one can look at the directional distribution of events and find out whether these are ultra-energy protons or photons. Of course, one cannot tell this on an event-by-event basis, but eventually, when Pierre Auger and other experiments collect enough statistics, this prediction can be tested. There is also a predicted associated neutrino flux. These are neutrinos coming just from the ZD case, but then you need some mysterious initial cosmic ray flux of neutrinos to start the mechanism working. And Haim's model-independent bound is somewhere here. And this is the glue limit from the Goldstone radio telescope after the first run. Now, if, of course, there are already theoretical papers doing data analysis based on the assumption that this mechanism is working. And one can actually find the neutrino mass by fitting the spectrum with the Z-burst prediction. This mechanism has problems. And of course, the obvious problem is that there's no obvious source of the ultra high energy neutrinos to start the Z-bursts. And most of the sources that one can come up with produce also a lot of photons at a low energy. Okay, and so they easily exceed the Eckert bound. We have worked out a model in which we produce just the neutrinos from the relic particle decay, but then Berezinski and co-authors pointed out that at these high energies, weak interactions are strong because you multiply the weak coupling by the log of S. And so there are loops that induce production of all sorts of junk if you just want to produce neutrinos. The way this thing violates the Eckert bound is that when you fit the spectrum at the highest energy, then and then calculate the cascade, too much energy cascades into the GeV photons. And then GeV photons you collect from the whole universe because there's nothing else that happens to them. And so it's you get dangerously close to Eckert. Of course, there is some freedom here because the error bars are huge. So. But that's, the Eckert bound is indeed very strong bound on Z-bursts. But there are also certain predictions for the neutrinos, and these provide the beam with which one can experiment and try to learn new physics at a very high energy scale. A class of sources described by Peter, marked here as AGNs, then there are these cosmogenic neutrinos at higher energy with lower flux. And one can try to detect those. The detection strategies rely on the knowledge of neutrino-nucleon cross-section because, as I explained, you would identify a neutrino as a particle that passed through too much of the atmosphere and then started showering. So there's a very credible calculation of of this cross section, and this is in the process of calculation. So this is an extrapolation of the cross section to very high energies, well beyond the reach of current experiments, the square root of S 10 to the 6 GeV, and that involves extrapolation of both the Parton distribution functions and the standard model parameters, and then of course this is under the assumption that it's just a standard model and nothing dramatic happens on the way. So, as I said, this cross-section is very important because that's how experimentalists know that this is a neutrino. And all the bounds you see from all the experiments rely on the knowledge of this cross-section. But what are the uncertainties? How well do we know this cross-section? Well, people have argued that at large q, small x, when you go well beyond where Hare has probed the parting distribution functions, there are all sorts of new, unusual, non-perturbative effects that kick in. There is the saturation region, there is BFKL, and then in the last, and people agree that this may change the cross-section. So in the last couple of months, there were two papers arguing that the cross-section may either increase or decrease as a result of these saturation effects. So if you look now at this plot, and in addition to the standard calculation by Ina and collaborator, there are other models that predict that cross-section may either get larger as a result of extra dimensions and strong gravity. I think it bends over eventually, but you know, that's, at least it starts out like this. And it can also be lower as a result of the saturation and QCD evolution. So it looks like there is a degree of uncertainty as to what this cross-section is at the highest energy, and it would be nice to measure it, except you can't build an accelerator to do an energy that high. Well, in fact, we will be able to determine what the cross-section is. So let's just consider the possibilities that it's either higher or lower than the standard cross-section. If the cross-section is strong, then the neutrinos begin to look more and more as protons. And people have explored this possibility, and in particular Robert considered very large cross-sections. And in fact, some people spoke of neutrinos with extremely large cross-sections, cosmogenic neutrinos, actually being the ultra-energy cosmic rays. I don't think you can get the cross-section that high, but what happens if the cross-section is stronger? It becomes, you know, the neutrino becomes more like a proton. What about the cross-section that is lower than the standard model? Now, since the rates of horizontal air showers are proportional to this cross-section, one may get worried. One may worry that, you know, maybe these experiments won't see anything. Maybe the detection of neutrinos will never happen. Well, in fact, it will happen in a very different way, however. In fact, if the cross-section is lower than the standard, then one can do interesting physics with that. What happens is that the decrease in the cross-section makes the atmosphere more transparent, and so there are fewer events horizontally in the atmosphere. But it also makes the Earth more transparent to neutrinos, and so there are more and more atmospheric showers that would come up through the Earth, because the neutrinos can get through the Earth, produce a tau below the surface, and then tau can shower. And one can try to measure the neutrino nucleon cross-section by comparing the rates of the horizontal and upgoing showers, and also by using the angular distribution. So people have discussed the possibility for detecting Earth-skimming neutrinos, and it looks like Pierre Auger and the Earth and the space-based experiments, USA and OWL, both will be able to detect those events. So if the cross-section is lower, then you begin to see neutrinos coming through the Earth at steeper angles. And if it creates a tau near the surface, then the tau can shower, provided that it decays in the atmosphere. So the decrease in the cross-section increases the flux of the upgoing showers. Okay, and you get the most of increase when this chord length is roughly equal to the mean free path of neutrino in the Earth. So the fraction of the number of taus per neutrino as a function of the cross section is shown in this plot. And you know, we don't go, this is the ratio of mean free path to the radius of the Earth. And we certainly don't go beyond this point. That's where Hare has probed small x region in QCD. So we know the cross section is at least on the left of this. But there is this dependency on the cross section, and then the rates for the upgoing air showers and the horizontal air showers are shown here. The horizontal air showers are just proportional to the cross section because the atmosphere is so thin. As for the upgoing air showers, it's 1 over the cross section, except the tau has to decay, and that explains this turnover of the curve. However, in this interesting range of cross sections, one can just read off the cross section from this plot by comparing the rates of the two types of events. Additional events not shown here involve Cherenkov light detection from a shower that just hits USA in the eye. So in other words, especially if USA is tilted towards the horizon, as people are planning to do at some point, they will see a lot of flashes of showers coming up at them if neutrinos produce taus below the surface. So this is encouraging. In addition, there is this angular distribution on this poorly rendered plot. Essentially, you get the most events when the chord length in the Earth is close to the mean free path in the Earth. And so the maximum of the angular distribution corresponds to some angle, and then you can read off the cross section. From this angle, you can read off the cross section here. The plot is courtesy of Tom Weiler. So all the, the poor graphic of our organizer is the reason it doesn't display it right.
Actually, Tom Weiler's a graduate student.
Oh yeah. So we keep blaming each other. Right. So what happens is, okay, we don't really know the flux very well, right? And we don't know the cross section, but we have more than one way to determine it. First, we have the rates of horizontal air showers that is proportional to the cross section and the flux. And we have the rate of outgoing air showers that is proportional to flux over the cross section. So one can just divide out the unknown flux to get the cross section. In addition, one has angular distribution, which peaks at cosine theta that's proportional 1 over sigma. So we can actually do this particle physics experiment with the biggest detector, which is the size of the Earth. And we can determine sigma and the flux independently. And so what one needs is, of course, statistics. One needs neutrino telescopes like USO. A side comment, if the cross-section is different from the standard model, correspondingly the bounds that people quote from non-detection of neutrino-initiated horizontal air showers, from non-observation of radio signals from the moon, the GLUE experiment, all of these bounds are affected by the cross-section. They are proportionally stronger if the cross-section is stronger, and they are weaker if the cross-section is weaker. So that, again, is the reason we really do want to know what the cross-section is. So I'll conclude by saying that the discovery of ultra-energy neutrinos is an exciting expected discovery of the near future. And it will allow us to do some interesting physics at the square root of s, much higher than anything that can be achieved in a terrestrial collider. Thank you. I don't know what exactly what the status of the simulation is. I know from the experimentalists that they are already taking some data and they have some horizontal showers, but those look like leftovers of protons that hit the atmosphere very far away. Okay, so they have some fast muons there, and they can analyze it. Of course, this analysis is being done on a very small fraction of the eventual array. Okay, and of course, anything that has to do with neutrinos at these small angles will exhibit the asymmetry with respect to the Andes, because you'll see more events. So that's an easy litmus test for whether you have neutrinos or not. You just divide the data into samples and see if you have some asymmetry.
That's the first cut.
Right, that's right.
I heard earlier that there could be these failed supernova or failed real gamma ray bursts in the early universe, which would not make photons by itself.
That's right. That's right. So that would be a source of neutrinos that is more prominent than the cosmogenic neutrinos, presumably. So that's. And so it's a good source for but it's not good source for Z-bursts. It's good source for everything else but Z-bursts.